Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I was a soldier, then a veteran, a husband, and a father. And with my VA home loan, I'm a homeowner. No down payment required and no PMI. Build your future with the VA home loan. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for this hyper amount of benefits mentioned here.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
This is Hidden Killers Year in Review, a look back at the biggest stories of 2025. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
We are unpacking today the bizarre and infuriating twists of the Long Island serial killer case, a true crime cocktail shaken with equal parts disturbing mystery, police corruption, and a suspect who hid in plain sight for decades. After more than a decade of investigation, hitting dead ends, why was it suddenly so simple to put the pieces together? And was the biggest obstacle to justice actually the people who were supposed to provide it? Here to help us make sense of the behaviors, motivation, and the spectacular law enforcement missteps in this unsettling case, retired FBI Special Agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, Robin Dreek. Robin, let's start with something that hasn't, let's start with something here that's been bugging all of us. How does a serial killer manage to live in an unassuming life for over a decade, seemingly right under law enforcement's nose, having a wife, having kids, interacting with the public, and all the while, nobody has any idea this is the guy?
That's a great question, isn't it? And every one of these cases brings different individuals into play, and obviously suspects like Huerman. But I think with him, it's kind of unique in the fact that I think I'm going to use a phraseology here that I don't think we've used before. And that is, I think he groomed society into normalcy with his behavior, because he was doing this for such a long time. And the only reason I think that is because I think he groomed his family into what was normal for him. You know, baby steps at the very beginning, as, you know, James Clear talks about in Atomic Habits. He didn't go from zero to murder, zero to serial killer. It was a slow grooming from normalizing unhealthy behavior. And I think what was happening was, as he groomed his family into this, then he started grooming his community into this. He holds a good job as an architect. And so I think people start making excuses for behavior over periods of time. Oh, it's just quirky. Oh, it's just this. So I really think he groomed society into his normal behavior so they could dismiss it until it became too much. And then it's like the dam that was holding back the floodwaters finally just opened up and went goosh. But again, a lot of missteps along the way, obviously, with investigators and things like that added to that ability to groom. But I really think he groomed society into his normal behavior.
Like, he had a sense of where he could go, who he could groom, basically, mm-hmm. and who he could take advantage of as well, having, I guess, knowledge of, you know, the sex worker, you know, community, and lack of care, I would say, from society, lack of care from law enforcement in that specific area, and really as a whole in many places. If you go after the lowest common denominator or the weakest link, you can get away with doing a lot of horrible things to people that are very innocent, may not necessarily be the people society deems as the most upstanding, but human beings that are living lives that are having trouble, that they're going down those roads. And he just seemed to take advantage of them and knew that there was a path to do it.
100%. Matter of fact, this area that he groomed and utilized for his own horrendous pleasure is, like you said, it's the sex trade. It's the sex workers. It's those women that have been so disenfranchised by society. And I looked at the numbers on this about a couple of years ago now, because, you know, you and I have covered a couple of serial rapists in the past, mm-hmm. and serial sex offender rapists. And the numbers are absolutely horrendous. And this is why he took advantage of this. And that is, I'm given just off the top of my head, I know it's not going to be completely accurate, but it's somewhere in the realm of, I think around 80% or 85% of all sex workers are trafficked. Mm-hmm. These women have been trafficked. This is not, you know, as society thinks, a choice women have made to do this. The vast, vast majority have been trafficked into this by horrendous individuals. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is, which even cascades even worse on top of that, I think about 90 to 95% of them have been raped. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't think that from someone in that trade, but absolutely against their will, they've been raped. So they've been trafficked, they've been raped. And so then you take the stigma of a horrible label and you place it onto someone, you objectify the human being. So there's a lack of personalization, and it's easy for society to shove them aside. Mm-hmm. It's easy to ignore them. It's easy to take advantage of them, like Huerman was. And as we've seen allegations in law enforcement from time to time, that they have too. I have covered so many cases where, for one thing, the distrust that industry will have towards law enforcement because of either being taken advantage of by law enforcement, being ignored by law enforcement, or being arrested themselves by law enforcement, that they won't volunteer information that would be in their own best interest. Mm-hmm. And also from their own side, their own people in oversight or pimps or whatever you want to call them, the fear factor is immense with mm-hmm. this totally horrendously disenfranchised group of women. My heart goes out every time we cover a case like this.
The fact that he was able to carry this out for all of this time, and the fact that, you know, sometimes there was, allegedly, it seems like there was people that he had seen more than once, people that he never killed as well. Is there a factor in this, you know, behaviorally and psychologically, where someone like Rex Huerman, kind of a socially outcast a bit, you know, he's not necessarily the guy that's popular at the party. He's kind of looked at, I mean, we look at him now and we profile him. We look, oh, he's kind of a big ogre guy. Before anybody knew he was, or allegedly is, the Long Island serial killer, if he is, you know, I'm sure he dealt with a lot of people in society and life looking at him and kind of putting him down and judging him for his looks and his personality and such. And then you have that same sort of thing going on with the disenfranchised women who have been trafficked, who have gotten into the sex trade because they don't have any other choice. Is there like a level there where there's some sort of commiserating, some sort of, you know, almost trauma bonding that goes on that allows both of those individuals to have a certain level of trust with one another that would then enable Rex allegedly to carry out the deeds that he was able to do, because both kind of being outcasts, if you will, in society?
Maybe. It's an interesting thought. I think definitely a potential linkage there would be unhealthy behaviors attract other unhealthy behaviors, and unhealthy people do. So I think, you know, that's part of it. So there's a normalcy from the type of clients you'll have. There's a normalcy from the type of women that were now accepted in his life. Because when you desensitize your environment towards your behavior and towards your proclivities, like you allegedly was doing by having, I mean, decades ago started this behavior allegedly with sex trafficked women, mm-hmm. you know, desensitizing his own family. So it becomes part of the normal behavior. That's definitely part of it. But trauma bonding as well? Yeah, potentially, because the women that he was targeting, again, vast majority, well, I'm going to say in the 90% mm-hmm. have been trauma bonded to yeah. whoever's controlling them at that point as well. So they're very used to it, unfortunately.
Yeah. How, I mean, obviously it's a slow cook for trying to get your family to go along with you on, and I'm not saying that the family knew what he was up to, but obviously, I mean, just, I mean, look at the home that they lived in, look at the kind of hoarding type lifestyle that they had. And just the, it's almost like a view into Rex's mind, if you will, with a reflection of the home and the environment that he surrounded himself in. Chaos, a lot of chaos. It seems that it's probably not all that difficult to get your family to go down this road with you if you slowly inch them there. It's the frog in the boiling pot of water and such. Is that what we saw going on here with Rex Heuermann, likely, the way that everyone at the beginning, I mean, including us, looking at Asa, even looking at the adult kids going, how did you not know something was going on here? And I don't to this day know if she did. I certainly have questions about it. It seems rather weirdly inconvenient that she was out of town every time that these things were going on, and they seem to have this own kind of duality of separate lives. But if that's the norm, that's the norm for you. And I guess that would be in a way that you don't see what is going on behind the curtain.
Yeah, you used the phrase going down the road with you. I don't think I would use the exact going down the road with you thought process here. Mm-hmm. What I think might have been going on is, remember, all of us are extremely predictable, all human beings, and that is we crave and we will do all behaviors we can to feel safe. And so I think what was most likely happening, again, subjective third-party conjecture on my part, not licensed psychologist sure. and all that, but I think what was happening is if you have a wife and children that feel unsafe because of the environments or the behaviors of your spouse, your father, and all these things that you're slowly groomed into, what you're going to do is you're going to start getting reps at ignoring behavior, because observing and acknowledging that behavior would make you feel unsafe, would make you feel less than, it would do all the things that would psychologically harm you. And so we naturally start doing things to ignore that behavior. So when you start getting a muscle memory of how to ignore behaviors that you're observing that you've been slowly groomed into, that's exactly what I think was happening. I think they were, everything's a choice, but I don't think they were consciously at the point at the very end choosing to ignore behavior or going down a road with him. I just think they had a long decades worth of reps of learning how to feel better about themselves and feel safe in a completely unhealthy environment.
Yeah, I mean, it's survival at the end of the day, yeah. and your mind will adapt to do however it needs to get by. Speaking of unhealthy behavior and I guess grooming to a certain extent, let's talk about James Burke. He was the guy who was there as part of the original investigation. He was in the police back then, the chief, when all this was going on actively, at least when it seems a lot of the murders took place. And it seems many of them did not get the attention and the manpower that they needed to be further investigated. Obviously, Burke has his own sets of issues that he was charged and arrested for and convicted on. He certainly fits a profile of someone active in that community, of someone who may not want his own choices being exposed if someone were to go down the road of Rex Heuermann. I guess, how does someone like that enable a department and enable investigators to not investigate something like this? It's obviously people are there. They want to keep their jobs and all of that. That may just simply be the answer right there. People are going to be looking out for their own self-interest. But at the same point, it's not like these things were happening in the dark. Other people had to have seen that, hey, we're completely turning a blind eye to these sort of things. How does someone in his type of position at that time, you know, gain other people's trust and don't have others dissenting, saying, hey, no, we really need to fix this. We need to be looking at these things, because it went on for so long in that sort of a structure of law enforcement. How do you think that was playing out, where this was able to go on for so long without a true in-depth investigation?
Here's a possibility. Again, don't know because we're not in the department, but
yeah,
in law enforcement, and think about for yourselves doing your own thought experiment in any job. I mean, Tony, even you know, with all the great content and cases you cover, you have more coming in than you probably have the ability to put out. And so it's the same thing in law enforcement. When I was at FBI headquarters and I was managing counterintelligence investigations around the country, it was, there's no way I could actually put everything as priority one because there's just too much. The volume was too high. So sure. What I'm thinking of most likely in these cases, every department has many more cases and investigations that need to be covered than they have resources and personnel for. And so you prioritize and you stack and you restack every day. Mm-hmm. You know, what am I going to get arrested for if I don't cover? What am I going to get fired for if I don't cover? And what's a great thing that I have to cover because it's a righteous thing to do? And so you kind of have those three piles. And every day you're restacking these piles based on what's the most critical thing. Now, when you have a boss above you that is supposedly helping you restack this pile, because you still have lots of righteous work to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they might be help you rationalize how we're not going to pay attention to this case because, oh, it's just a sex worker case, or we have all these. Instead of saying what not to cover, he might have been saying, hey, here's what's really important to cover first. Mm-hmm. And once you get done with that, well, then we'll move to this one. Then we'll move to this one. So I don't think, again, if I was him going that deep context from his point of view, if I want someone to not cover something I'm trying to cover in my own footsteps, it's alerting when you tell someone not to do something. It's less alerting when you need them to do something else. And so instead of taking something away, so in other words, don't do this investigation here, that's alerting. I would mm-hmm. say, hey, you need to do this, this, and this first, and not even talk about that one. So I think he's probably overloading in one area to keep him distracted so he doesn't go to that area. That would be my context, because he's a smart guy.
Yeah. Well, that
might
makes
be
sense.
Horrendous.
Yeah.
But that's smart. That's what these really horrendous people will do.
Yeah, it's by omission, basically. It's lying by omission, it's distracting by omission.
I think it's really keeping his people distracted with other righteous work rather mm-hmm. than covering this. And downplaying it, rationalizing it, or not just again, the last thing you want to do if you're trying to cover your own tracks in an area is bring attention to that area. So the best way not to bring attention to that area is to keep them focused on something else.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I think he's probably doing. He's probably keeping them focused on other investigations.
And yeah, I mean, I guess for his own best interest of what he was involved in, that makes sense. But many departments, it's a social construct. It's how we view this in our society. I'm not saying it's right, but it is how people view this sort of work, as, you know, well, they almost view people in this area as less than, as, you know, sometimes not even treating them like human beings, you know, more care sometimes for animals than they do for people who are in these horrific situations. And at the end of the day, victims of rape, of sex trafficking, of all these horrible things, these people are victims and they are trying to survive at the end of the day, and they need help. They don't need to be run over a time or two again by some self-righteous warrior who wants to say, you're right, you're wrong, and I deem you morally reprehensible or whatever, which is what we normally get. From an aspect of law enforcement and trying to get behind all of this, trying to get ahead of all of this and get to the deep roots of some of these problems, not only in the sex trafficking area, but other areas of crime, into the drug trade, into so many other things, sex workers seem to be kind of low-hanging fruit here that could easily lead to other areas and systemically get the tentacles into other areas where one could open up other investigations and pull more people down. It seems it's kind of an easy way, if you were in law enforcement, to enter into that realm and get in here, get this information, and then find out more people that you can take down that are tearing apart society and destroying lives. Why don't they look at that more in that way? Why don't we investigate things in that way when it's right in front of us, but it seems a social construct of, oh, these are icky people, it's not worth our time, when really you look into that area, you're going to find so much more if you go down those paths.
So from the law enforcement professionals I know,
yeah,
they are so pro trying to do exactly what you said you need to do, you know, and it, you're right in a sense that it's low hanging fruit that we know these horrendous things are going on surrounding this industry. So you think that the prosecutions would be easier to do. But the most challenging hurdle, because I've worked with departments that have tried to crack the nut on this, and they are such good, caring. I mean, law enforcement professionals, by and large, you know, we tend to see the negative ones when covering some of these cases because they're the root of some of these cases. But the vast, vast majority of law enforcement professionals are so caring and just compassionate towards everyone, including the sex trade, because they know how, just like my numbers showed you, they know where it comes from. So there's a huge amount of compassion. The greatest challenge, Tony, is in every investigation, the most critical thing you need for success is confidential human sources. Mm-hmm. Confidential human sources tell you where to focus your subpoenas. They tell you where to focus your technical expertise. They tell you everything you need to know to for a case. And this is the most challenging industry to develop confidential human sources in because of fear. Mm-hmm. The women involved have such a fear. They have fear of the people that are controlling them, of their pimps and or their handlers or whatever they're calling them on their side, and that fear of law enforcement, that of not trusting them, not to arrest them as well and take them down or turn them in. And so a couple of cases and operations I consulted on a number of years ago was actually out in California. And they actually asked me, one of the departments, I think it was LAPD I was working with, you know, they were trying to do just this. They're trying to get better confidential human sources. And it's possible, but you don't develop trust like this. Trust takes time. Trust takes a pattern of behavior where someone feels they can share with you their most horrendous vulnerabilities that they have, their insecurities, their fears, their traumas, and not be judged so they can feel safe to share things with you. And that's what it would take in these situations. That takes time. That takes patience. But when you're dealing with then bosses above you that have a high degree in need for speed, we need collars, we need turnover, we need cases and prosecutions like this. It doesn't give the investigator the time he needs to develop that kind of trust to get the kind of sources they need in the sex worker industry.
Is that,
it's one of the greatest challenges.
I mean, does that come down to lack of manpower? We don't have enough investigators that can focus on more longer term things where it's going to take longer to build those relationships because there's only so many people for so many crimes. And at the end of the day, the public wants accountability. They want to see the results now, even though it does take time to get them. And there's just not enough resources to focus on this the way that it would produce better results.
There's a few things. So there's always a manpower and resources issue, but it also requires a very soft touch, requires really seasoned investigators that have time on the street. They have time doing human interactions. You know, someone who's a fantastic interviewer knows how to develop compassionate, empathetic rapport without judging, you know, understanding that these are the individuals you're going to be communicating with. Then it also requires a vast amount of patience from the prosecution side, from the investigation side, from executive management to say, hey, this is going to be a program. It's going to be a longstanding program. We're going to need time to develop the competent human sources we need to actually make a dent in this. And so it's to me, it'd be a three-pronged approach from that point of view.
I mean, should there be more focus on ways to create essentially like a safe space, if you will, for women who have been trafficked or women who are in this trade, that they can come forward and not have to fear that they're going to be arrested, that they don't have to fear that, okay, they're going to tell their story and it's like, okay, well, go back out there. Good luck. And your pimp can find you and all these people can go after you once you've basically snitched. On whoever you are snitching on, more of a safe system where, okay, almost like witness protection to a certain degree of, okay, come in. We are going to protect you going forward. We can get you out of here. We can get you far away from these people where you don't have to worry about your safety. We will relocate you and create a system of that where there can be more sense of safety and coming forward with information that can take the bad guys down rather than this being this, I'm afraid to talk to you because I'm going to go have to live my life here still. And I don't want to go to jail. Not to say to give it a free pass that, you know, nobody can get arrested in this if you're participating, but something where the information they can provide far outweighs any reason to arrest any of these women for what they're doing to try and survive or are being forced into.
You know, I'm going to have a lot of conjecture on this one as well.
Yeah.
I don't have any names or numbers off the top of my head, but there are a large number of departments doing exactly what you just said. And it's because I know we're going to get some people reaching out to us saying, well, we do it.
Yeah.
And I know they are, because I wouldn't even be able to think about it unless I've heard these cases that they are doing it. It's being able to share those best practices amongst other departments. And they do that at conferences and such on this type of thing. And I know we keep saying that women are being arrested for you know, dealing with the sex trade, but believe it or not, so here I am again, I'm putting my investigator hat on. I'm not about to arrest anyone that's been trafficked, you know, because if you look at how they got into the trade, it's not that they're doing illegal activities, it's that they were illegal activity was done against them.
Yeah.
And so a lot of great investigation, great departments are doing just that. They're not arresting women for being trafficked because that's how it started. And so that's why there is a lot of patience. And so law enforcement has seen it. But again, what it takes is I hate using such a flippant term, but it takes flavor of the day, because every jurisdiction has a new flavor of the day that we got to make a dent here, or a new politician is trying to get elected. And this was their platform here. That's what it really keeps coming down to and driving where the focus is. It's politicians that are being elected. It's social media or media outlets that are covering certain cases in a certain way. And all of a sudden that becomes the clickbait for someone to focus on this.
Yeah.
So I like keeping things really simple, from the start at one single point. But this is one of those complex things that there's a lot of wickets that I think need to be aligned here. So let's start at the top. The top is elected officials have to make this their platform, because when they're elected into these positions, that platform will then get trickled down. Because when if a local politician is elected into a position and that becomes their platform, that part of my platform is to end sex trafficking and end human trafficking. Because again, it's not even sex, end human trafficking, because that impacts fentanyl. It impacts the drug trade. It impacts all these other things. So they can tie it there, and then you can have that trickle on down. And you hit all the nuances and tendrils that go out from that. I think that would start making a big difference.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
So, the ex-wife of the alleged Gilgo Beach serial killer, she just watched a Netflix docu-series, allegedly, and now she's allegedly wondering if her former husband is a fall guy in one of the most disturbing serial killer cases in recent history. We're talking about Asa Elrup. We've talked about her in the past, who was married to Rex Heuermann for nearly 3 decades. It's not exactly screaming conspiracy theory from the rooftops, but after finishing Gone Girls, the Long Island serial killer, that's out. It's on Netflix, right? Is it Netflix or is it Max?
Yeah, it's Netflix.
Okay. She's raising an eyebrow, maybe two. And honestly, when you dig into the history of corruption inside Suffolk County law enforcement, she might not be completely out of the line to ask, wait, what if? Mm-hmm.
I'll give her that.
I can see that. I can see it. Let's start with the dirty laundry, because Suffolk County has more than a few skeletons in its own closet. James Burke, the former police chief, is now best remembered for solving cases, but for going full WWE on a suspect who had the audacity to steal a duffel bag filled with porn and sex tapes from his police-issued vehicle. Yeah. Burke beat the guy, tried to cover it up, and then got slapped with a 46-month prison sentence. Meanwhile, then-District Attorney Thomas Spada, instead of investigating Burke, allegedly helped sweep it all under the rug like you do. He was eventually indicted for obstruction, corruption, and witness tampering. All of this. The beatdown, the porn bag, the cover-up would be hilarious if it weren't so grotesquely real. Elrup's legal team is now asking a very real question. If this is how Suffolk County handled its own messes, how can we trust anything the cases against Heuermann? Well, I can answer some of that. Because your husband wasn't investigated while they were there. It took them being kicked out for anyone to start looking into this more seriously. So I don't know that you really want to go down this road because, I mean, it may show some connections, maybe. I don't know. But I don't know that it really leads to he wasn't involved. That doesn't seem to be where a lot of this goes.
And don't forget, you've got the hair.
And her hair. On the bodies.
That's a big deal.
On a couple bodies. Yeah, that's kind of a big deal, too. Because, I mean, Richard Allen was convicted on a bullet that likely wasn't even from his gun. You got your DNA on a body. And your daughter's DNA on a body. And his DNA on a body. On separate bodies. On separate places. On separate occasions. What are the
odds
there?
And a weird spreadsheet of activities to do after you've done things to people.
Yeah, let's not get started on a spreadsheet of activities. Which, that's a whole other thing. So, Asa seemed like a smart woman. Kind of. Who divorced Huerman not long after his arrest is reportedly keeping a close eye on his court proceedings, including the ongoing Frey hearing, which could determine whether the DNA against him even makes it to trial. At the heart of the debate is a forensic method called whole genome sequencing, which sounds like something out of CSI, Space Edition. The defense calls it magic. Prosecutors call it science. Dr. Kelly Harris, a highly respected geneticist from the University of Washington, spent an entire day testifying about how the process works and why it's legit. In layman's terms, it's a super detailed way of matching DNA. And in this case, hairs found on the victims reportedly tie back to Huerman or people close to him, like Elrip or her children. Prosecutors claim these hairs were recovered from the remains or crime scenes of 6 of the 7 victims. That's not small stuff. It could be the linchpin of the entire case, but again, the defense is arguing that this method has never been tested in New York courtrooms and shouldn't be trusted until it's vetted through the proper legal channels. Well, guess what? Technology evolves. You get new things, and some cases are going to have to start using it. It's been vetted. Just because it's not seen a courtroom in New York yet doesn't mean it's not legit. And just because it's coming in on your trial doesn't mean you can say it's not fair, it's not right. I get it. You're an attorney. You're going to argue that. But it doesn't mean it's like, hey, Billy came up with this down the hall. He thinks it's real. No, not that. A brief rewind on the horror show that is the Gilgo Beach murders. From 93 to 2011, a string of women, most of them sex workers, vanished after meeting clients. Their bodies were eventually found dumped in remote spots along Ocean Parkway. Some were bound, some were dismembered, some were discovered in pieces, scattered between different sites. It was like Long Island's own version of a true crime nightmare. Here I'm in a 61-year-old architect who looked more like a guy you'd call to fix your kitchen backsplash than a suspect serial killer, was arrested in July of 23. He's been charged with the murders of 7 women so far: Amber Costello, Melissa Barthelemy, Megan Waterman, Maureen Brainerd Barnes, Sandra Costello, Jessica Taylor, and Valerie Mack. He's pled not guilty to every single one. And in a move that feels more like a legal strategy than desperation, his defense is now asking the court to split the case into 5 separate trials. Suffolk County's DA office insists there's no evidence the Huerman family was involved. They were reportedly out of town during the alleged murders, but proximity and DNA are still in the spotlight. And then there's Netflix adding fuel to the fire with Gone Girls, directed by Liz Garbus, who also made Lost Girls, based on the 2013 book by Robert Kolker. The series shifts focus from the killer to the victims, their families, their stories, and how the system reportedly failed them. It doesn't exactly paint Suffolk County in a golden glow. Quite the opposite. As for Elrip, it was enough to make her question whether her ex-husband was being thrown under the bus by a system with a very shaky track record, allegedly. She's not denying the tragedy of the crimes. Her attorneys made it clear she extends her sympathies to the victims' families, but she also wants justice to be rooted in truth, not corruption, not cover-up, and not convenience. For someone who shared a home, children, and a life with the accused, it's personal. Whether Huerman is a monster hiding behind a suburban life or just a man caught in a very dark chapter of county corruption remains to be seen. But the courtroom drama is far from over. The judge still has to decide on the DNA evidence. And if you ask Asa Elrup, that decision just might decide everything. It might. It really, I mean, if they don't get that DNA in, he'll go down on other things.
I mentioned, and I keep mentioning it, every time we bring up Huerman, my mind goes to his basement and the things that they found in the basement.
Yeah, like his litany of child porn.
and that's
violent.
Concerning.
Yeah, all violent in all its nature and all that. Yeah, that might be an issue. The fact that they, you know, well, if you're going to go down the conspiracy road, you're going to say that everything in here is made up, that they planted the the to-do list or the how-to list or whatever the hell that was, that they planted the hairs, you know, all in effort to frame Rex Huerman of all people. Now, at some point, you just did it. If you got that much stuff in your house, or you're very, very disturbed and your proclivities towards death and sex and murderers are really, really disturbing and messed up.
If that's what you're into, then you take a look at the victims. The victims fit that profile.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say we keep the DNA out there. I mean, was it Shannon? I can't remember.
Gilbert?
Forgive me. Yes. Wasn't she the one who described him as like an ogre?
Yeah.
And I mean, there's a physical description that basically fits this man.
Yeah.
And his weird stalking of one of his, maybe an assistant or secretary or something when she was on a cruise. I mean, this guy is a creep.
I have no idea if Asa Elrup knew anything of what the hell was going on here. I'm not saying she's involved in the murders. I don't think she was involved in the murders. I do want to know what she knew. I do want to know what she saw. I want to know what was life like being married to this man for 3 decades? And did you see signs that you just didn't recognize at the time? Or were you, was it cognitive dissonance? Were you too close to it? Were you compartmentalizing things? What the hell was going on? And how do you have absolutely no idea that this man is, at the very least, very active with sex workers on a regular basis? At the very least.
I think she's the boiled frog.
Or did she? Was she aware? I mean, again, and if you're aware that your husband is out with sex workers, I guess that's, there's not a, I mean, well, sex work is technically a crime in New York, but I guess it's, you are not committing a crime by being aware of that. I don't know why anyone would want to be in a marriage with someone who's like this. But everybody,
maybe it's all she knew.
Everybody has their own things. So, I mean, again, not a crime to condone, or, and I'm not saying she condoned it, or just being aware of what he was up to. Not necessarily that he was up to murdering people. But I guess there's a level of not wanting to be fully aware of everything too, that some people get into. You know, some people literally have spaces in their homes where like their spouse just cannot go, does not go. And it's like strict. That to me is insane, but that's how some people live.
Yeah.
So
I know several people like that. Like you don't go into my man cave. You just don't go there.
That's weird. What do you have in there that you don't go in there? Seriously, what do you have in there that you don't go in there, that you couldn't go in to the man cave portion of the house? What the hell do you have in there?
It's a valid question.
There should never be a valid reason for that in a marriage, in a shared house, that one party cannot go into another part of it.
Well, to me, that just screams that there's something huge missing and you're just ignoring the huge red flag in front of you.
Completely.
Yeah.
That's all that you're doing.
It's not working and you need to escape from your spouse.
I'd be very concerned if mm-hmm. if my spouse for any reason said, you cannot go into this part of the house. You cannot. Yeah. I mean, I have no problem with privacy where it's like, you know, you don't look through each other's phones. You know, I think that gets into territory. If you're feeling you need to do that, there's issues. I don't think it's not a healthy relationship if for the sake of the relationship, you're checking through each other's phones and paging through everything. I think there's a level of privacy there that is fine if you trust the other person and things are good. It's never a solution, I think, to go, well, now we're going to check each other's phones just to make sure. That's extremely insecure behavior. It's controlling behavior, if you look at it that way as well. And I don't know that it's ever really justified. And not to say that the other person couldn't be doing something horrible, but if you're at that point, you probably shouldn't be in that relationship.
Yep.
Because spying on the other or doing random checks on things like you're the parole officer of your spouse is not going to fix your relationship.
No.
But to not go into a room.
Well, a lot of people are in denial and just it's easier to sit where they are than to go, you know what, the situation is not working. They've got a man cave or whatever that room is that I'm not allowed to go into.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's not healthy.
A lot of people who live in denial.
Yeah.
And the status quo, they would rather, you know, their bank accounts remain where they are than have to take the hit and get into a situation where they feel free.
And what kind of weird control is that too? Of you can't go into this part of the house.
Yeah.
Again, what are you hiding in that part of the house? I mean, what the hell are you doing that the other person couldn't go in there? I don't see any reasonable explanation.
Especially if you inhabit the same house, the same
Because guess address. What? If they're doing something illegal, you're also on the line too.
Yeah, you are.
So you might want to be aware of what's going on in your house. And there is no valid reason ever to not allow that to happen. Unless you're doing something really, really bad. Or you're afraid that they're going to get mad at you for whatever. And then that's not healthy either.
Yep.
It's not a healthy relationship if that is what's going on in anyone's relationship at all.
There's a lot of unhealthy relationships out there.
Oh, yeah. Because I think, I mean, it goes, if you're doing that, it goes beyond, oh, he's looking at porn on the computer. If you can't go in there, then erase your history. If you're just looking at regular old porn that's not child or illegal or something horrible. What are you so concerned with somebody finding that?
Most of it's on your phone now. It's not even on your computer, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, the phone's portable. It's not a room. So what is happening in your man cave that you don't want your wife to see?
Well, I mean, look at that case out of Kansas City where the guys, like, they were all like my age, like early 40s or late 30s, and they go over to their friend's house to watch a Chiefs game, and then they go in the backyard after they did what they thought was cocaine, but it was laced with fentanyl, and they die in the backyard. And the owner of the house doesn't even know about it. And I don't know if there was a wife. I do not know the answer to that question. But if you got shit like that going down in your house and you got, like, hubby's got cocaine and he doesn't know it's laced with fentanyl, or he has cocaine in general in your house that you share children with, you probably should know about that. And you should probably both be on the same page. If hubby's going down to the man cave and he's snorting coke, you should probably be okay with that if that's how you want to live your life. That shouldn't be a secret. It just shouldn't be going on in general, really, if you're a healthy person. But, if that's your setup and you're all on the same page, like, you don't do that, but I want to do this, and we're going on here, and like, okay. But again, you also have to think of your own liability. This is happening in your house. You also can be in trouble for that, for being in possession of that. Again, there is no viable answer to this. I'm curious, anybody in the comments that wants to argue this and tell me how this is ever a valid idea or reason, I'm all ears, because I just don't see any reason why it would be in a healthy relationship.
Well, and I think the key word there is healthy. I think there's probably ever since the pandemic and quarantine and things like that, I think there's a lot of relationships out there. And I'm just speaking off the cuff here. I'm not a professional, but I feel like there's a lot of relationships that deteriorated and people are just going through the motions now. It's just, you know, they looked at their finances. They looked at living situations. It's just...
people are stuck.
People are stuck and they don't know what the fuck to do. And they look at their retirement accounts and all of their bank accounts and go, I'm going to lose everything if I leave this situation. So I would rather stay here, be miserable.
And put up with that sort of demand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, the price of things right now is so high that I think a lot of people are just like, I can't take that hit. You know, they feel trapped. They're cornered. It's easier to exist where you are.
Yeah, but it's not.
Than to do anything.
At the end of the day, it's not. What's worse than spending another day in a toxic, abusive relationship? Spending another day in a toxic, abusive relationship. That's the worst thing. And people keep going down that path over and over. The best thing is to get out, no matter what.
I hear
it's difficult. It's difficult. I know it is. But, you can also end up in this situation. Or you can end up dead. That happens a lot, too.
Imagine it does.
Or your kids are subjected to this insanity. And then they grow up and think, oh, this is normal. Daddy can hide anything he wants from mom.
Right.
And if they're little boys, then they get into a relationship later. Well, dad did it. This is totally fine. Little girls, well, dad did it to mom. So I'm totally cool if my husband sets up a rule like that. That seems normal.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. You're also demonstrating toxic behaviors to your children, which will then repeat those cycles. And God knows what will happen to them. So.
Oh, and you're allowing toxic behavior to yourself, too.
That, too. Yeah. Yeah. It's
a lot.
It's one of those where it's just a kind of big, take a big glass of wake the F up because you need to. And I don't think Asa, you know, took that sip until it was way too late. I want to see the Fitty documentary that's coming out on this, on Peacock. Still no word on when that's going to happen, but we know she got paid for it. So what's she going to say in it? I don't know. I'm guessing they're going to wait closer to trial to drop that when it's a little more top of mind. Once these other cases die down and that one comes up, it'll be very fascinating.
Want to stay on top of the latest true crime cases? Press subscribe now and never miss a breaking update from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious to buy chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
By law, 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
ChumbaCasino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.